Junior, and please count for that. And he was a commercial leasing agent.
Thank you. function of the public hearing that commenced on November 27, 2008 regarding the Hershey West End project, and remind those in attendance once again that it is and has been the public policy of the Township to record all public meetings for the purpose of providing accurate minutes, and that today's presumption of this hearing is no exception to that.
Yeah, I think we did.
If everyone would join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd appreciate it. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And just for housekeeping purposes, if everyone would be so kind as to mute or turn off their cell phones so as to prevent them from ringing during this meeting, I would also greatly appreciate it very much. Bless you. So, if, boy, this is sensitive tonight. Yeah, definitely. Jill, may we have roll call for this?
Here.
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 Here. I'm having a difficult time remembering where we left off. Did we leave off on public comment or with you, Chuck?
I'm happy to give just a quick recap, if it
pleases
the board. I believe that the presentation was completed by the applicant at the last hearing, that we had started to break into public comment. There were no other public at that time that were interested in asking questions, not to say that couldn't happen again this evening. I think we were pretty much up to board questions. So I think Ken has maybe just a little bit more of a detailed recap for you just to kind of get your head back in the game. The only thing I want to remind you of is that if indeed the hearing does conclude this evening, that you will have 45 days to render a decision. So looking ahead at the calendar, the next meetings coming up are December 22nd, which is going to be in 2 weeks. Pardon? I'm sorry, December 18th. You'll see why I'm... Okay.
How about the 24th?
January 7th, of course, is reorganization, and typically we don't have other business here. The 45 days end January 18th, and now the 18th is the but the meeting is January 22nd, thus my confusion. So the applicant has offered an extension of time if the board feels it's necessary to go into the second January meeting, and I've informed the applicant that if that would be so, we would ask for an extension to February 12th because we don't like to come right up to a meeting where if there isn't a quorum, there's a deemed approved. So just so you understand the timeline. So conclude if the hearing concludes tonight, you can take action on December 18th, January 7th. January 22nd, only with the time extension by the applicant. And with that, if it's okay, I'd invite Ken to make a little recap of...
We have a meeting January 7th?
That's the reorg.
That's the reorg,
okay. All right, which we don't typically do business at.
That's correct.
Chuck, I don't know if you can, I don't know how to get back to that. It's the second page, I think. Okay. Okay, looks a little weird, but okay. I'll just do just like Chuck said, just to kind of get your head back in the game or recap, and move on from there. Just a couple takeaways from the last hearing or the first part of this hearing. Planning and public input on Hershey West End began in 2011 to the start of the Derry Township Comp Plan update. So this has been a long process, and I think we've done a decent job of being transparent with everyone and bringing the public into the process really throughout that, throughout those years. It is a long term. It's probably the first time in my career I've been involved in something that's not just the next building. This is a master plan. It's anticipated that this is about a 12-year build-out, so that's unusual. But it's been refreshing to try to really think about all factors, not just the next building, or what's the traffic related to that building, or the impact of that building. The key takeaways, and both in terms of the school district and Derry Township, there's a net positive impact in terms of income after you subtract expenses. In the case of the township, at full build out, it's estimated that it would be $1.6 million annually. The formula used in developing that it is part of the zoning ordinance, Appendix E of your zoning ordinance, and I guess talking to Chuck, that's been around for a while. It goes back originally to the 80s, so that in the school district's case, that annual net positive based on that same formula in the zoning ordinance is $5.4 million. One thing as came up quite a bit last time was the connection between Bullfrog Valley Road and Middletown Road. One key thing this will create is that first section is clearly the most expensive section, and especially when you factor in the roundabout and connection with Waltonville Road. So without this project, that vision of creating that linkage, at some point that would have to be funded some other way if indeed the township wants to create that connection. The roundabout, a lot of discussion about the roundabout last time. We've dealt with that issue for about 12 months since it came up, met with a lot of folks that are sitting up here. The main reason the roundabout's there, it may take 20 seconds or so longer, and if you do Craig's calculation, but the main thing is it's just a much safer a situation with a roundabout than it is any other, leaving the current system and putting another putting a light in up there. It's just much, much safer, and that kind of won me over on that. Chuck already talked about the next steps, but the reason we're here and the reason we started this, again, this was a piece of ground that was zoned for commercial or office use. We believe that the project will create a town-like mixed-use setting. It is expected this will achieve the objectives of making Derry Township attractive to the younger generation of workers, and we hear that from all the employers and even from people you meet that are thinking of moving to Hershey or their kid lives in Hershey because they're working at the Med Center, that there's that doesn't have that right feel to it right now. And also, attract workers of all ages or residents of all ages to, in our research, it's kind of a missing link in terms of you can buy a fairly expensive house, but that kind of entry level rental and or townhouses, and I'm not saying these will be low priced by any means, but it's just kind of a missing link right now. And again, Chuck mentioned this, the conditional use hearing, that what we're looking for this morning or this evening is direction to have community development finish the conditional use decision for consideration by the Board of Supervisors. And we've talked about the 45 days. I put 45 days in here not realizing we're going to need a few days. You're going to need a few days past that just from the time of year standpoint. With that, I'll turn back over to you guys and see what we're other than the architect from Pittsburgh, everybody that was here last time is here and available for questions. So thank you.
The roundabouts, first of all. I know in previous discussions, are you guys heading for the larger two-lane modified roundabout as opposed to the single-lane roundabout?
Good evening. Craig Millott again with Traffic Planning Design.
Sorry, Craig.
Chuck, if you want to open up the PDF, I can answer that question. It would be the traffic exhibit dated today, I believe. Okay. Yep, up one right there, I think that one. And if I can, am I able to move with this? Okay. So your question is, we're showing a single lane roundabout. There was discussion about the need to add lanes, how we're going to go about addressing that potentially. Just kind of bring up the board to speed. What we're proposing to implement is a roundabout that has single lane approaches on it up front. That will work with the initial two phases of development. It'll work safely and efficiently. Based on PennDOT standards, there's some debate about whether an additional lane may be needed on the roundabout in the future, specifically northbound, so this approach. So what we've done, and this is skewed for some reason, Chuck, I don't know. It's it looks like an egg. It's not going to be that shaped. Ultimately, theoretically, down the road, you may need an additional lane on the roundabout northbound that would drop into a ramp onto the Route 322. We met with your staff. We met with a couple of the elected officials. What we've tried to do with what we're proposing is to put in a roundabout that has a diameter that will easily accommodate an additional lane should it be needed in the future.
Craig, for everybody's benefit, would you go into that a little bit deeper? Because it was interesting to hear how you came about this roundabout, how you started with a smaller diameter.
Mm.
And would you mind telling everybody?
Sure.
I think it would be helpful for everybody to have that background.
And on that note, my understanding is that the National Traffic Safety Center has various sizes of roundabouts, some of which are safer, some of which are not safer. And you didn't touch upon what category the anticipated roundabout falls within. And secondly, if it is expanded, who's going to pay for that expansion?
Sure. So there are single-lane roundabouts or multi-lane roundabouts. Those are the two categories you're talking about. Single-lane roundabouts, the statistics I had conveyed to you previously in terms of PennDOT studying them, no fatalities being reported, reduction of 50% crashes, those were related to single-lane roundabouts. All that means is each approach has one lane approaching and then circulating the roundabout. So here, again, this is oriented differently. This is Waltonville Road. This is the frontage road. This is West End Avenue. This is proposed to be a single lane roundabout. It's the type of roundabout that experiences the safety benefits and the operational benefits that I referenced earlier. Multi-lane roundabouts are ones that have an additional lane. That's what we showed here. So this particular roundabout has an additional northbound lane that carries through and then drops. You could theoretically have additional lanes on this approach or this approach or this approach and still be multi-lane. They are safe. They can be designed in a way to meet standards. The crash incidence does go up because they're a little bit more complicated. What we are proposing to do is this is all driven by PennDOT standards. The capacity issue, the need to add potentially this additional lane, is only because of a theoretical PennDOT requirement that we might need it 10 or 15 years down the road. We aren't proposing to build this additional lane on the roundabout. It won't go in unless there is a direct determined need to have it for capacity. But what we're trying to do is to not do something where we design a roundabout and have to go out and do substantial reconstruction to add a lane. And the reason for that, and Justin kind of identified that, unlike a signal where you add turn lanes and it's easy just to kind of patch on pavement, roundabouts are complicated. You have to design them in such a way where the speeds entering it meet standards. You have deflection. By deflection, I mean you angle the approach so people are forced to slow down. So it's not as simple as putting in a small roundabout with a single lane and then just widening to add onto it. It would seem that you could do that, but you can't. So what we've done with this particular roundabout is we've made the diameter of this roundabout slightly larger than what you would see for a very small roundabout. Instead of 130 feet being the diameter, it goes up to about 186. It'll be constructed with these single lanes. It will then be easily designed so that if we have to add that northbound lane, we can do it just by patching on the pavement that's shown here in the green area. As far as who would do that, I think the agreement is as the third phase of land development occurs, we'll reevaluate the development, see how it's generating trips relative to what we assumed. If there is a direct, immediate need for the additional lane, then the trust will be responsible for the cost to implement that. Our hope is that it's not needed. We think the feel for this area, the bike and pedestrian and multimodal accommodations are a little bit easier with a single lane roundabout, so that's our hope and our desire. But we're planning in the event that this generates more traffic than is anticipated.
It was an interesting conversation because we talked about is if we didn't go, because correct me if I'm wrong, but the speeds that people will go through this roundabout are slightly higher because the circumference is super slightly higher.
Right.
They're slower with the smaller circumference.
That's right.
The problem is in 15 or 20 years or 10 or 15, whatever, when we need that extra lane, the question comes up, who's paying for this? And obviously that's a big question. And if you're going to have to increase the size of the whole roundabout, it's a really big number.
Right.
Compared to just adding the lanes.
Correct.
And so we get a little bit faster, a little bit faster speeds at the beginning, but we're thinking long term. And so that's kind of the discussion that we had.
Last time we had that discussion about the need for that roundabout because you envisioned putting a traffic light at the end of the entrance exit ramp.
That's right.
And the desire not to put a traffic light on Middletown, an additional traffic light on Middletown Road. And it's those two factors which necessitate or warrant the placement of that traffic circle. Yeah. So the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. Obviously, the only people that are potentially being affected by this are the people coming off Middletown Road. So if you were to explain to the people on Middletown Road why it's worthwhile, how much longer of a trip is it going to take?
So there's two answers to that, because the first phase, when this doesn't exist, will be different than once this goes in. Once this goes in, that will substantially change the distance that someone headed to and from the south on Middletown Road would have to drive. In the initial phase before this is built, this is when you compare the distance for this yellow line, the realignment, to the green, it's about 300 additional feet of travel at the speed limit of 45, which is what the speed limit is on that road. It's about four additional seconds of travel time to get from this point to this point versus that point to that point. And then the distance to head from here to the north to get you back to where you were is about 600 feet. Speed limit's a little bit lower. So assuming people drive the speed limit, and that's definitely an assumption, it's about an additional 11 seconds. So you're talking about travel time, an additional 15 seconds for someone that wants to come here or do the reverse of that as well. This came up in the meeting that we had. I want to distinguish between travel time and delay. So the roundabout, what motorists will experience trying to get through the signal, the actual stopped delay, having to wait for a green light or yield to get into the roundabout, the delay they experience getting into the roundabout is going to be less than what they'll experience in the future at the signal. So there's actually a net benefit of stop delay that you experience at the intersection. The only increase is the travel time simply because we're separating the intersections out, and there's approximately 900 feet of additional travel that has to be experienced. Right, yeah. So when we do our analysis, it's an average. Not everyone gets a red light, but on average, the delay experienced at the roundabout entering it versus the delay experienced at that existing signal is going to have 10 to 15 seconds higher delay than the roundabout.
I'm sorry, if you hit a red light.
Right, okay. Correct. Yep.
But on the average is that it takes an extra, 14, how many seconds?
So the added travel time for someone coming from here, it's going to be about 4 seconds here and 11 to 12 seconds to go that way.
Understood.
Right.
Yep.
Because you can also hit a roundabout. The beauty of the roundabout is if you come in and there's no one in the actual circulating lane, you can enter at 25 miles per hour. You don't stop.
Yeah.
It's the same as the signal if it's green.
Okay.
So again, I'm sorry, 15 seconds?
Yep. And the other element that we'd add to that is the safety benefits and then the long-term ability to accommodate traffic with this versus the existing configuration where you have signals that are very closely spaced together. Long-term, the safety, and then the overall efficiency is what we think justifies what we're proposing.
Out of curiosity, you haven't figured out travel time on the new road, have you?
For West End Avenue?
Yeah.
Here?
For the
connector.
For the connector road.
Oh, down here. We have not. That's something we could do. It's a relatively simple calculation in terms of the travel time, the actual travel driving distance between the two points. We'd have to figure out delay here and then delay here as well to do that. But that's not a difficult thing for us to do.
Okay. So you now proposing that second roundabout with phase one or no?
We're not. So this is, the commitment was, of some of what we talked about, I won't rehash that, is to, as part of this project advancing, testing this for feasibility.
Yeah.
So determining, can a roundabout work here with a roundabout here? Will the delays work? Can the alignments be done?
And also the best route.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Just making sure, just because you throw a roundabout on the plan here, this is just a graphic, it hasn't been designed. We have to make sure that it'll work and meet PennDOT standards for delay, and that the separation distance between those two roundabouts will work. My gut sense is that they'll work fine. I think the separation distance you see at these two roundabouts isn't dissimilar from what's on 322 now, and that it would actually work well. But we have to analyze it. We have to prove through analytics that it will work. My point.
I guess that's an important distinction, because it's sometimes when it appears on the screen as this presentation, it's like, oh, well, they committed to a second roundabout. So, sure. But just to be clear, it's not – so what you're – that's not something part of the PennDOT scoping. It's not – that is being shown as sort of conceptual with the connector road.
It's matching your
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. The other element quickly is, if we can determine that it's feasible, PennDOT will make us put a roundabout in as opposed to a signal, because that's their preferred intersection treatment. So absent it being feasible, that's what we would have to do, put that in the intersection treatment.
Okay.
My follow-up question. I have another question other than the roundabout, in case everybody wants to talk about the roundabout some more. Okay. Stormwater runoff. It's just a clarification question. Give me a sec here to find the... Yeah, on the overall stormwater approach sheet, the pink lines on here, are they the... Is that where the
presentation? Oh,
yeah, on the present. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'll find it. This one. That one.
The pink lines. Is that where the water would come out or be drained to and through?
Bill Fredericks, RGS Associates. It's the two yellow stars are the discharge points, and those are existing pipes.
Okay, what,
now.
The pink ones are the existing pipes.
The yellow stars are existing pipe locations.
Oh, okay.
Storm pipes.
What are the pink lines?
The drainage divides.
Okay.
The proposed drainage device. Sure. So when the site kind of gets graded, this half of the site will get pushed or diverted to the existing culvert under 322 at discharge point one, right. And then this side gets routed through and goes through study point four. That's where they exist now, and that's where the drainage divides are now. It's just a post-development drainage map.
There are many continents.
So in the analysis, there's a pre-development where you analyze what's happening now, and in our post-development, we can't exceed that pre-development at those two stars, discharge point one and four.
Okay. And this isn't going to cause any issues with lowered off in high school or anything?
No, we've actually had meetings, and Hummelstown Borough was a part of those meetings with DTMA to kind of talk about this overall stormwater strategy and the stormwater approach.
It's important to point out that they understood that they can't increase the size of the pipes going under 322 because of issues already.
I understand that.
That's how this is designed.
So,
all right.
Go
ahead. No, go. I was just going to say thank you.
I was just going to say, so the two stars, where do they go? So,
this study point four discharges to an existing swale. As part of discharge point four, there's been talk with PennDOT about some of their expansions, and we've been coordinating with them exactly how they're expanding and making sure it's incorporated into our site plan. So that discharges to an existing swale. This is being analyzed as discharges to an existing storm system down Waltonville Road.
Yeah, but at a higher level, like Bob Evans, does it end up going, does one go to Bob Evans, the other one goes to Hummelstown, or?
Yeah, pull up Google Maps. Sure. I believe study point four discharges towards the. Yeah. Yeah.
The Full Fog Valley Road stream goes to Bob Evans.
Yeah. This one doesn't.
That particular study point
Mark Hackenberg with RGS Associates. That particular study, point number four, discharges down through lands still owned by the Hershey Trust on the opposite side of Route 322 and enters a storm system that goes underneath behind Gold's Gym and down through that commercial development. It ultimately discharges into the same stream channel that is adjacent to Bob Evans, but it's downstream at the point of discharge down around the sheets. Comes into that stream section right down there is where the discharge points.
And the only reason I said Bob Evans is because that's where we saw the major sort of the flooding occur. So. Yeah. But then the other point does not go there. Is that correct? It goes through Hummelstown.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
By technical definition of a dam, I'm going to say no, because there is a technical DEP definition of a dam, and we're not in that. Per the improvements we're proposing on the site, we'll handle the stormwater as it relates through the culverts under 322. We're essentially over-detaining, if you look at pre-development rates, to make sure we can meet the capacity of those pipes.
And for what year flood is it being designed?
Up to the 100. So it's for ordinance requirements, and off the top of my head, I want to say it's 2 through 2, 5, 10, 25, 50, and 100 are the design storms, I think.
So, that wonderful stream bed that parallels Bullfrog Valley Road. Yeah.
Yep. It currently, that's pretty close to an existing drainage divide now. So it exists, as it exists now, it is discharged to Bullfrog Valley Creek. It will continue to do so. There's some existing basins related to the existing medical office building located here. There were some facilities put in or being installed with the Englewood Barn project, and as well with the UGRO. Project as well. There is this little bit of expansion here, and that will be handled in this stormwater facility here to meet the release requirements of the ordinance.
But where we see the flooding, where we saw the flooding with Bob Evans,
right.
and so everything from the hospital, from what you just referenced, and that first area still goes there. It probably all goes there today. Right.
Correct. And Bullfrog Valley, again, has a when you look at this, you can see study point four, the existing or off-site discharge is actually fairly limited. To study point one, it's a little bigger. I think it was about 90 acres off-site, 90 acres on-site. When you look at Bullfrog Valley, it keeps going up Bullfrog Valley Road, and there's a lot of contributing area that kind of goes under the 322 culvert at that off-ramp there.
We had a couple of storms in the township that greatly exceeded a 100-year flood, like to 500-year level. What's going to happen when we have this again?
Sure. So per the ordinance requirements, not just the township, DEP, everything's designed for those particular design storms, and there's certain methodologies to account for them with some factor of safeties built in. In addition to that, when you design a stormwater facility, you include emergency spillways, emergency outlets for those types of situations. When it's a flood, and that's what's going to happen. But there are provisions within the design of the facilities to allow the flow to discharge and dissipate.
Thank you. Change the subject a little bit to trees. Last hearing, we talked about trees 40 feet apart and trees 70 feet apart. And if you can't get trees the right distance, you're going to plant the same number of trees. So the gross number of trees will be equal for 40 feet or 70 feet.
So what happens, the requirements I think is like between 40 and 60 feet spacing, and then there's a certain amount you have to provide on streetscapes. So what happens in a development like this, you have driveways come out, you'll have connection points to different commercial settings within the corridor, and it just you have that you have a driveway, you have on-street parking, it just becomes difficult to exactly meet that 40 to 60 feet. So what we're proposing, if you took the streetscape and you took the requirement and it said, and I don't know the exact numbers, I'm just going to approximate it, said you needed 1,000 trees. We're going to take those 1,000 trees, and it might not be spaced 40 to 60 feet, but they'll be spaced somewhere between, you know, some might be 20 feet apart, some might be 70 feet apart, but we'll provide the 1,000 trees within the site.
Yeah, and you differentiate between street trees and, like, meadow trees and that?
So I believe there's a requirement for street trees. There's other landscape buffering requirements. There was a landscape plan provided, which, again, kind of met the basic requirements. Certainly, throughout the site, there will be landscape improvements throughout.
By the way, street tree list is excellent.
Yeah.
He's the one that's not here. So
All right. Jump to another subject unless anybody wants to stick on trees or stay to trees. So the pattern book. Can you talk a little bit about what that procedure will look like? What the pictures that are shown in the book for the commercial buildings, is that what they'll look like, or is that how does that work in coordination with the ordinance?
And I apologize, that is the one person we didn't bring back, so I'll give it, and Dave, between me and Dave, we'll try to answer your question.
Yeah.
The pictures in the book, if you think of it as a pattern, so
yeah.
The intent is not the a building matches that picture, but it follows that pattern.
Yeah.
So the existing U-Grow would be an example. I mean, that would fit, if you look at the commercial section, the patterns and the building materials would, not the original U-Grow, but the expansion of U-Grow would fit within that pattern book design.
So just use the hotel as an example. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but that, I thought the hotel was beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
But it's also expensive. I mean, it's not a cheap facade to build. So how does that – what types of things are mandated in the pattern book?
What's mandated, I mean, it's more material. Typically you'll have, and we will have, there'll be a project architect or somebody that is assigned from UDA to review, in the U-Grow standpoint, review their plans. There's a list of materials that you can use,
mm-hmm.
and a list of materials that you, by definition, they're not on the list.
Yeah. Okay.
Does the hotel look exactly like what you're seeing on that picture? It's a rendering.
Yeah.
A developer will come in and move that around a little bit. But,
okay.
If we're going to create the value we need to for this whole project, if we let somebody in, come in and put a split face block hotel up, it's history.
Yeah.
Right. So it's meant more as a guide and standards to follow.
Guide and standards to follow, but they're enforceable through the condo declaration.
That's an important question, I think.
The condo association will be the one, and not the township enforcing the design guidelines, if you want to call them that.
Oh, so we will not enforce the pattern book.
You will not enforce the pattern book.
Association does.
The association will.
You are approving the pattern book as part of this approval. It's
got
one of the requirements coming through that the architectural styles are what you want to see there.
Right. Okay.
But so far as the future enforcement, that's done through the.
Okay.
And just if you could think about it, if we're deviating, if we get loose on that, I mean, trust me, somebody will file a complaint.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So it's committee-wise, it's probably not too dissimilar to from the downtown
mm-hmm.
association. Other than it's not a, I guess the downtown association is a publicly appointed entity.
Mm-hmm.
The land condo association is the one that would enforce the guidelines.
Yeah. And did I hear that the way that the master plan is written, that the signage would not would still be the township ordinance and not the pattern book.
Wherever, and that's a note. Chuck, you want to handle that?
Yeah, so the actual on-site signage is still falls under the township zoning ordinance. What the master plan process allows is for the wayfinding signage, which also is in here, for the wayfinding signage to be at the discretion of the developer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a pretty nice section in here, and I think I'm heading.
In terms of what? In terms of number? In terms of design?
Right,
color?
And there's actually the architecture or the planning tree also the planning plan. The landscape plan also includes the proposed location of the wayfinding signage.
Are they bound by that?
Within reason, yeah. And I think it was well thought out. I mean,
I guess the reason I brought it up is because I thought the pattern book was really impressive, and I think that there's a lot of amazing planning that's gone into this, and it just kind of seemed like it might be difficult to have somebody putting together really great architectural plans, and then all of a sudden they have to go to the township ordinance to look for signage when they're really doing a pretty good job with the architecture already, and is it going to be tying their hands to follow the township ordinance as opposed to what they could do otherwise?
I don't think they're too dissimilar in terms of intent. What I think community development didn't want was, if you grow decided they wanted a sign that was 3 foot or 4 foot larger than it should have been under the ordinance, and technically the pattern book allowed it, you want to enforce that regulation across the board fairly to everyone. So I mean, we're comfortable with it, and I think it may be an extra. They're close enough,
mm-hmm.
but you're right. The developer is going to have to make sure that they're meeting, both a pattern book and a township ordinance.
Yeah, because I could see the U-grow is being seen by whatever the traffic count is on 322, which is high. So it's being seen by a lot of people. I could see.
Yeah.
But when you go to create your sort of sense of place on that corridor internally,
yeah.
it's not seen by the rest of the township unless you're there. But,
that's right. Yeah.
But
so
if you guys are
challenge.
Fine with it. Then.
Yeah. I think we're fine with it. And again, you go as an example. I think they did come in initially. I don't think they filed it that way. They initially wanted, I think, double the size they had, and both our guidelines and community development's regulations on signage sort of matched up in terms of intent.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Bro wasn't necessarily thrilled about that at the time, but
mm-hmm. Right.
But Bianca is he's got the best sign in the
I was just it's funny, I was just noticing it the other day, and that sign doesn't need to be big for it to be noticeable.
That was
the only sign on the building, and it's
I think both Chuck and I convinced them of
And the real discrepancy, quite honestly, between what they're proposing as signage and what we're proposing in the township, bear in mind these will be public streets, so it's not only from 322 where the public's going to see the sign.
Yeah.
But the major discrepancy was the same thing that we've recently got complaints about, which are the temporary yard signs.
Yeah, yeah.
They're allowing and
right.
we don't.
Right.
That was my main concern, was
yeah.
that
okay.
clutter.
Yeah, good.
Ken, one of the questions brought up the initial meeting, I think it was from Roy Michelson from Oakmont. He had asked a little bit about sort of plans in the event that the direction would change, that the board would change, that leadership would change, and certainly that's not the intent of this group today. But I don't know that you had enough time to really fully answer his question, and it's a good one, and I think one the public would certainly like to hear an answer to. What happens if you get in 5 years and the direction of the board would change?
Well, first of all, we've started that in the process, that our intent is to hold this as a long-term investment in some fashion. When you get to single-family houses and those kind of things, that becomes more difficult. You're right. I mean, very good question. What if something happens? They say, well, let's. I think the conditional use that we're writing, why it's intended that you're always dealing with Hershey Trust, the conditional use parameters that you're creating are going to, you know, it's not like somebody could come in and say, well, we've changed our mind. We now want to build apartments up by Oakmont and put the, you know, single family houses down along 322. We're bound by this, these, whoever, God forbid somebody else is doing this development, and I'm probably not working there any longer if that's the case, but the plan, sitting in your shoes, you'd have to assume that it's possible or that somebody else would be operating it, but I think the plan's well developed enough, and with your approval, you know, somebody'd have to come back in to change it.
And you guys will be spending a lot of money on the front end with that.
Yep. That's right. The big investment. I mean, the first land development plan you'll see on this, details will be worked out as to how a letter of intent works in terms of how long it takes to get to the roundabout and constructing the roundabout. We're not proposing other than that's the phase. This listed as phase one, but it's phase or phase two, but it's phase one of the new plan. Yeah. There's a very significant upfront investment in this.
So you'll be stressed out for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to elaborate out on that even a little bit by the ordinance. Within the ordinance under the master plan section, there are permitted modifications and prohibited modifications that they must stay within. So just for a flavor of them, the building footprint, no particular building can change its footprint by more than 2,500 square feet. The site must support the minimum parking requirements. Any modification can increase the peak hour trips by more than 2%. So there's other things that are not permitted is no additional dwelling units may be proposed under this approval. So what you see here is what you see. So there's other safeguards built into the ordinance itself also.
In terms of number or type or what do you mean by that?
Dwelling units. No additional dwelling units may be proposed.
Meaning in number.
In number. Right.
But the mix or...
like if you wanted to change apartments to townhomes.
Yeah.
Condition of land use approvals, modification of the plan may not expand, enlarge, or violate any condition of zoning relief previously granted without approval by the board. General site layout, minor revisions to the layout are permitted so long as the internal traffic patterns and principal building locations are substantially the same. Substantially the same refers to not exceeding the maximum number of dwelling units and square footage of commercial spaces proposed, changing the boundaries of the master plan development, or substantially changing from the approximate location, height, bulk, and square footage of proposed structures. So, and the pattern book, as I already said, is really approved as part of this. So if they really want to, if they substantially change the look of the development, I think that would constitute a zoning violation.
Ken, while we have you up there, looks
gone.
Like you have...
I just about got down.
Just sat down faster.
It looks like you have about 2 miles of the Jonathan Eschenhauer Trail on there, and that's presently being maintained by the township. Are you going to be taking over maintenance of that trail?
I hadn't thought about that, Matt. I mean, I think
existing portion, the township may want to continue to – there's a lot of attachment to that trail section. By folks in the township. I don't know if they. It's not a huge expense one way or the other, but we haven't thought about that.
But I think that's a great question because I see Marvin's here, and you know, at some point, looking at the most highly traveled parts of the trail, and thinking about snow removal.
Yeah.
You know, because with all these people living there, there are trails, but. The medical center has trails, but sometimes we've talked about that for years where it's it may make sense to consider that at some point. But
I'll editorialize on the idea that you ever start plowing trails, but that's another
Yeah.
That's a debate for another time.
It is a debate, isn't it? Because they don't, it's hard to...
Where do you stop and where do you start?
Pretty, putting my property management hat on for the guy that's been responsible for trying to keep the Chocolate Avenue sidewalk in front of the mansions cleared and the golf course section cleared, I don't think you ever want to go there.
Well,
regardless, I mean, once one section's done, you're doing it all over, and it just...
Yeah.
It seems like a good idea, and it just... Once you clear it, then are you putting salt down? What are you doing to the...
Yeah. But one, I know what you struggle with there. You struggle with the plows hitting that. So that might be higher maintenance. But there's a lot of areas, as we look at bike and ped being more and more prominent and more being used, to say to people, well, if it snows in the beginning of December and it stays frozen until February, I'm sorry, you can't use it. You know, it's a debate for now.
Clearly is, because again, once you do one section, you know, it's not like you say, well, do the section along Bullfrog Valley Road, and then they get to the section in front of the medical center, and that's not. I mean, it's kind of one of those things as an all or nothing.
Yeah.
You know what happens if it refreezes and or not, and what section, who gets their part of the trail cleaned off and who doesn't? And so it's more complicated than a lot of people would give it credit.
Yeah. I mean, if you could say, hey, it's one snowstorm plow, you know, and then like Mark said, it's not remelting and refreezing. I've also had the benefit of being the beneficiary of letters that say I slipped on yours.
Right. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
That's self-heating macadam.
Question for Amy. Is it Amy? Okay. I have a question. I know you did such a great report last time, but I was curious about the impact on the county. Obviously, we're seeing, as Ken reminded us today, about the impact on the township as well as the school district, but obviously this project would benefit the county as well, and I didn't know if you had pulled that together or had an idea of what you could share.
I did. I only looked at the property taxes for the county. That's the work that I did in conjunction with the Dauphin County Office of Tax Assessment. If you give me just a moment here to find that page.
Needed to give Ken a break, so
welcome. So it looks like the total for the county, once all five phases are built out, the estimated total property tax revenue annually will be $2,259,816. That's our estimate.
Thank you.
Amy, while you're at the mic, so one of the big advantages of creating housing like this in Derry Township is that correct me if I'm wrong, but right now we have a lot of people who work in Derry Township, but they live elsewhere, so their earned income tax is being paid somewhere else. How did you estimate the impact on earned income tax?
Yes, we were extremely conservative on earned income taxes. What we determined, speaking with some local realtors and factoring in absorption rates, was that probably about 50% of the people who are going to live in West End are also going to work at the Med Center. Those are the only... I'm sorry?
In
Derry Township. That 50% is what we use to calculate the new earned income tax. We're also trying to be conservative, so we used the 2016 per capita income, which is only $46,000. These folks are going to be at higher wages than that. There's also the infill development. So, you know, one might argue, well, people are moving to West End, but they might be vacating other residences in the township.
Right.
Yes, but then your absorption rates are very high. You don't have a lot of houses that just sit on the market. So somebody's going to move in and take those units.
But you feel like you're conservative on the earned income tax?
Very conservative.
Okay.
I have a lot of residents that ask me about if you put any value on environmental services when you use your formulas and everything. I notice in Appendix E there's no account given for, like, the character of the town when you come down 322 and see a beautiful open space, or the view from up on Wood Road when you looking north across the valley, or the value of land, of agricultural land, some of the best in the world, I might add.
I guess I'll push back and maybe disagree with Matt. I think we're going to improve it.
Okay.
A cornfield's nice to look at, but done properly, and I think this project's developed properly. And with a straight face, I think you're going to improve that look as you come into the person.
Yeah, but have there you ever seen a formula that puts that's very hard to put a value on something like that. But
my expertise is in quantitative. Those tend to be qualitative values, and I'm afraid I don't have that expertise.
Thank you.
We're engaging in a national debate right now, monetizing the value of environmental protection.
Yeah.
But it does bring up an interesting question about trees. Is it somewhere in the ordinance as to what size trees need to get planted? Because that will go to how quickly it looks like a nice neighborhood versus a cornfield that just was developed. Yeah, right.
Parking lot trees have to start at 2 inches, 2-inch caliber, which is a pretty decent sized tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sapling.
Yeah.
Street trees I'm not quite as familiar with.
Yeah.
I didn't bring up my saldo.
But you think that there are requirements in our cell, though?
Yeah. Yeah. In addition to the street trees, we're getting one tree for every 8 parking spaces as well. And one, how many parking spaces? Anybody remember there, Bill?
3,880.
And you've already computed the trees, haven't you?
Is that what it is? How many trees?
3,880.
Wow.
Parking places.
Parking places.
Oh, parking places. Places. Got it.
Divided by 8 gives you the trees for the parking lot.
Got it.
If I may, I know Dave's going to correct me later. For the record, Amy Cronenberg, GMS Funding Solutions.
Any other questions?
I got one more quick question for you guys. Retail spaces. Those go in phase 2, right?
If I'm correct, Bill, it's mostly phase 2, some in phase 3.
Okay. How confident are you in getting reliable renters for those? And what kind of shops are we looking at here? I see there's a grocer here and some restaurants.
I guess that's
what that haven't been felt out yet?
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have spent this kind of dollars getting to this point on somewhat of Ken's whim. fairly confident. I mean, one of the beauties of the phase project is, you know, we could have a significant recession. We'd say, okay, so we're going to pull back for a little bit. So I'm not making any, standing here making any guarantees that we're going to be 100. It's going to be easy to 100% lease the retail.
Has there been any interest?
We've been on the road, and what you realize with the stage we're at on is we're looking for the right partner. So
you're trying to fit if Trader Joe's right where the grocer is going to be, right?
There's not going to be a Trader Joe's in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
All right. Like a reporter.
There's a Santa Claus, yeah.
Yes.
We've had discussions with different. I mean, the key to retail is to find the right grocer. Interestingly enough.
Yeah, I'm just concerned that you get reliable folks that are going to be there for a long period of time or a decent period of time, and that you have 100% or close to 100%.
I think in order to, again, for this to succeed, it's we're trying to create that village or town-like setting. And if you have, 50% vacancy, it's failed. So we'll,
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from members of the board?
I have another question about roads. You have, two things. First of all, the parking lots, we talked about the spaces. Is some of that going to be pervious? Some of these parking spaces.
At the way it's designed, the stormwater, the initial concept, no. But certainly that is one of the BMP options that was provided in the packet. As we kind of talked about last time, the perimeter was going to be for rate control. Interior is where we start to evaluate the type of use and what BMP, water quality BMPs make sense.
Okay.
Certainly pervious pavement will be evaluated for, you know, certain uses, absolutely.
Good. And there's about 5.5 miles of road in here. Transportation experts, 20 years from now, what is the cost to resurface a mile road? On an average, is that?
Eric was almost ready to talk.
Putting me on the spot here a little bit, but typically $10 is a square yard for just typical resurfacing, no, not including base repairs or anything else, just that.
Yeah.
So $10 a square yard, 5,000 feet of that, that 10-foot width. What was that, 5,000 times 100?
Okay. Well, knowing the square yard price, allow me to do some arithmetic.
Could be maybe $100,000 or $200,000 to repave a mile.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else on the board? Hearing none, is there anyone in the audience from the general public that would like to make some comments on the presentation this evening?
$100,000.
And if you'd be so kind as to state your name once again and your address.
$2 million.
This would be for a valley.
I'm Teresa Peschel, and I live at 48 Half Street. I wasn't able to come to the previous meeting, so forgive me if I'm asking questions that have already come up. I actually have three. I noticed that there is no connection from the neighborhood onto Wood Road. So all of those people will have to come in and out one of those three entrances. Is there eventually a plan to put an exit onto Wood Road because it would allow the traffic to come in and out a little bit more easily? On the subject of safety, I come off the ramp fairly often at where 322 meets Waltonville Road and it turns into Quarry Road on the other side, and I regularly see pedestrians and people on bicycles moving back and forth. And is there going to be any accommodation for that? I know you're going to have to work with PennDOT and the borough of Hummelstown, but I do see people using that overpass over 322, and when you build out the Western Gateway, you're going to see more people there.
Going back to starting from Hummelstown, it's, if you weren't here last time, it's proposed to install a traffic signal at the westbound off-ramp. So that will be designed with crosswalks, curb ramps, pedestrian signal crossings, and then we intentionally, with the roundabout, you'll notice we put the trail on the west side of Waltonville Road here, and it runs all the way up to the overpass and ties into the sidewalk on the west side. So anyone walking to and from the borough will go through a signal that can accommodate pedestrians and then be able to hit the sidewalk on the overpass and continue to the roundabout, and then at the roundabout they can cross however they want. To be designed for crosswalks.
Because we're trying to make some more pedestrian and bicycle traffic, particularly integrating Hummelstown to the township, we're going to be seeing that, so I want to make sure we have that option.
Sure, and the roundabout will be designed to accommodate bikes as well.
And I had one last question about trees. In the interchange between 322 and the overpass at Quarry Road, and then the next one where Middletown Road is, I think PennDOT actually owns the green space on both sides of 322. We have a collection of Neapolitan maple trees. Those are very unusual trees. They are very rare. I have never seen them anyplace else. They are not native trees. These are the maple trees that when you see them, when they lose their leaves, the branches go straight up, as though every, like a saguaro cactus. This is an actually a really unusual, really rare tree. Are you going to keep these trees? They're in the median strips, the green strips, where Waltonville Road and Quarry Road meet. So you have some of them. Let me have the. I don't even know if I've got this thing on. There we go. There are one or two of them here and here. And then if you follow the road up to the interchange with Middletown Road, there are a couple more of them on that section as well. They look like, if you are not paying attention, Lombardy poplars. They are not. They are Neapolitan maples, something very, very different.
I've noticed those trees, and I've often wondered what they are.
That's what they are.
Ink looking, yeah.
To answer your question, from where you're saying they are, I don't think anything that we're doing is impacting those trees, particularly as you go to the west. I thought you were talking about the trees along 322. And,
yes.
Fronting this project, but the trees along, I don't think there's anything. Yeah, they're within.
Yes, they do. They are in the PennDOT right of way. Because they are really unusual trees. You can see one or two of them in that Google Earth picture.
Chuck, you want to bring up? Actually, help. Why don't you point to which ones you're talking about?
The trees that look like this. And there's one further down. There's a couple of them. As I said, there's further down at the intersection of Middletown Road and 322 and the service road. They're in that section between.
Again, we have no intention of doing anything, but we can't. PennDOT does have some improvement plans in that area, so I have no idea.
Yeah, that's in the next corridor where they. But Teresa, it's interesting that PennDOT does have some plans as you get closer to Hershey. And one thing that they talked to all of us about, and again, they said, "Hey, there's some trees here," and they actually, I was impressed how much they brought it up instead of just taking them down. They brought it up as something that they might have to disrupt. So I would hope that when they'll be removing the road, the access road there.
Some of those trees, if you look in the picture of the PennDOT plan, some of those trees right there will be removed by PennDOT.
Yeah.
By me. That was like one of my first things I did when I came to Hershey Trust. Told you how old I am because those are pretty big trees.
Well, you can always plant more further in.
Yeah, no, and our commitment is that PennDOT will reimburse the landowner for taking trees out, and our commitment is that we'll use that money to put more trees back in.
All right. Thank you.
Any other public comments or questions? Okay.
Jay Ziegler, 971 Bullfrog Valley Road. I had asked him. Is it on? There we go. Thank you. Jay Ziegler, 971 Bullfrog Valley Road. I had asked some questions at the last meeting, but I just wanted some clarification. Is there any improvements going to go to Bullfrog Valley Road with this project? No light changes on 322 and Bullfrog. Any light additions or things like that to help increase traffic turning left onto Bullfrog to go to your development? Okay. So nothing, but you're proposing to dedicate for possibility of widening of the road down if it should be needed by the township, is what you're saying. Okay. From University Drive down to, it's not University Drive, it's Research Drive or Boulevard to Wood. Is that what you're saying? Okay. So with your traffic study that you have done and the number of cars, the total number of cars that you anticipate using your new main artery going through the development there, do you have a figure how many you figure is going to be using Waltonville and how many is going to be using Bullfrog? Okay. Or you can come up here, I'll step to the side, either way.
I think the question is, do we calculate the amount of traffic using the Bullfrog Valley side of West End Ave versus Waltonville, which we did. There's extensive calculations that go into that, and as part of that scoping process I referenced, we prepared those calculations, submitted them to your engineer and to PennDOT, and they reviewed and approved them. And the reason I said it's not an easy answer is you're looking at peak hours. We looked at three in this case, the morning rush hour, the evening rush hour on a weekday, and then a Saturday, and it varies depending on those time periods.
That's what my concern is the rush hours, because right now Bullfrog, there's times, I've lived on that road for 37 years, and I've seen it increase, especially with the traffic increase from the Med Center, and that's going to increase too. If you're telling me you're going to have, 1,300 employees coming into that establishment, and we haven't even talked about customer base going in and out of that establishment for your retail, you have a lot of traffic that's going to be coming in on both ends on equal numbers. It's not going to be divided because you're doing a great job on Waltonville and Bullfrog is going to stay the same. It's going to be divided. I also have the intersection at the end of Bullfrog, and that is starting to see heavy use already, and that's going to impact that whole road eventually down the road. If your PennDOT's requiring them to say, hey, you're putting in a roundabout, but the potential of the growth is going to be greater than what we might think it is, and asking them to expand it down the road, perhaps that's something you need to keep in tune that, hey, once we reach phase 3 or 4, do a traffic evaluation and come back to them and say, it's not working. There's more traffic here, because it doesn't sound like they concentrated too much on Bullfrog. It's all in Waltonville. It's a great concept. I love it. I think you've done a lot of work on Waltonville. There's some issues, I think, with the bypass, as I mentioned earlier, but I really have a concern about Bullfrog. I think it's going to create a lot of problems, because already with the traffic, and there's merchant vehicles that use that all the time, and are you going to have problems with that? Thank you.
Hours.
Yep.
It's more coming up Bullfrog with Lifeline Drive on your left. I've noticed, because I live up there.
The three-way stop sign's not working.
No, it doesn't work. And
roundabout would be great.
And I don't know where you put
it. And that's the land would be on their corner to put that roundabout in there. That would solve a lot of issues.
In the last year, it has gotten. This
not what you want to hear, Ken.
In the last year, I can attest and agree with Jay that it backs up, especially during rush hour, as people are letting out of the medical center and other companies they work for. You can get backed up 20, 30 cars just going up Bullfrog Valley Road to that three-way stop.
Well, and I'll play traffic engineer or traffic amateur traffic engineer. I think the idea of West End Avenue is a lot based on relieving some of that Wood Road, Waltonville Road, because it's creating another opportunity. One thing to note is West End, there are no stops. It's a continuous road. There's no stop signs or signals. There's no place where you come to a left-hand turn on West End Avenue. It's a straight through. I'd like to hope, Jay, that it improves the situation. Going to kind of one of my points at the beginning is those people that are leaving the Med Center going out that direction and going up Waltonville Road are leaving the township. Maybe some of those are captured in the township.
I think it would be helpful to know what that number is. And Craig, is that something that you could In other words, how many people are going to that stop sign and going right on Wood and leaving the township?
It's in, I don't know if you get it. It's in the data. It's in that. It definitely is prepared.
Because that it would be, I mean, I've only hit it a couple times, but
it's bad, isn't it? Well, and like in the last year in particular, all of a sudden it's just gotten
If they're leaving
crazy.
The township from that direction, they're not going up Wood Road. If they're heading to 322, they're not going to be heading south on Bull Frog Valley.
No, but people in Middletown. So I knew some people in Middletown that would use Wood Road because it was easier to go over to the Middletown Road that way, I guess.
Yeah.
We actually, as part of our study, we did license plate surveys. It sounds like a creepy thing, but it's using GPS with cell phones. So we measured people coming from different directions and whether they were going to the med center or not. It's somewhat inexact, but it gave us a sense for where people are going to and from, and it helped us to calculate how much traffic we think would be displaced from Wood and Bullfrog Valley and go on to West End. So that was factored into our report.
I think that situation will be much improved once.
And to Jay's point, it's just we need to keep our eye on that. Mm-hmm.
And so would in the scoping process with PennDOT, would they identify township roads that they see a problem with, or do they only identify PennDOT roads or PennDOT intersections?
Our study area, the intersections included township and PennDOT roads. PennDOT will offer a comment, but they don't have purview. That's why you have your engineer do a review to make sure that we're complying not only with PennDOT standards, but township standards as well.
Okay.
And you really, in terms of improvements at the Wood and Waltonville Road, there's very little opportunity to do anything there. I mean, you're surrounded by wetlands and ponds and houses on the other side. There's not a lot of opportunity. That's why the alternative is where we ended up.
Yeah.
Last point, which we discussed in our meeting, some I think that Rick and Justin may remember, there is a commitment after this opens to evaluate whether traffic calming needs to go in for Wood Road. The hope is to take traffic off of Wood and Bullfrog Valley and have it on West End. There's some discussion about whether we put traffic calming treatments like a speed hump or stop signs in up front, and I think the collective decision was, let's not do that yet. Let's see how traffic operates once West End goes in. If there's the need to do some things in terms of traffic calming to get more traffic on West End Avenue, there's a commitment to do that.
That's great. I mean, it certainly would help the pedestrians who are trying to cross over to the trail because the cars still don't stop. So that might be something to look at. Thank you.
And is there any – Chris mentioned something that was interesting. Is there any – you talked about emergency vehicles. Somebody mentioned that. Is it called preemption?
A preemption device. When you're looking at upgrading the mast arms and the traffic heads and the signal heads, are you anticipating putting preemption devices out? The reason I ask is I was out there earlier today and I noticed that a lot of those intersections don't have it, and I saw a lot of ambulance traffic moving in and out of the hospital center. So it raised some concern in my mind that, you know, as people are trying to get to the hospital facility, preemption devices I think are a good thing no matter where they are in the township. But I just have that general question.
We haven't gotten that far. That's a design detail that doesn't necessarily impact the analysis we can take a look at. I'd be shocked if Lifeline Drive doesn't have emergency preemption right now since it serves the hospital. Some of the others may not. We could take a look at that as part of the design.
I can tell you that. I can tell you that intersection today, there were no preemption devices on any of those legs.
And I,
so.
Which intersection, Chris?
Right, Bullfrog Valley and going in Lifeline.
I don't know if maybe you can ask Marv later if it's there, if it's working, or if it was supposed to be there.
Could be because many of your emergency vehicles come in and out of different entrances, too.
Right. That's the maintenance space is over on Lifeline. But
Right.
Thank you all for coming back and talking with us this evening. We appreciate it.
Any other public comments? Ma'am?
Hi, my name is Janet Nicholson, 215 Mine Road, Hershey. I unfortunately didn't get to see the previous discussion. My general concern is increase in the population of the school system and how you guys are accounting for. I know one of the ECC issues is when the kindergarten goes full-time, that school becomes really crowded. And I guess some age is declining, some elementary school age students are declining, so there's a little bit of a possibility for accommodating more families with young kids. But has that concern gone into your calculation of how many more residences we can have?
They talked about that last week. I forget. Ken, did you address that, or did someone else?
I think generally, Amy's work anticipated the number of new students, talked about their life because of the type of housing to be spread out over the age group, it's not one particular type of housing. And we've also met with
the school district. Thanks so much.
And that factored into the revenue projections.
Got it. Because I know
a lot of
some
those homes are not homes where families with children might be moving.
And again,
anyway,
looking
correct?
At it now, I go, oh yeah, this isn't what I. It wasn't a full housing development.
It's a really great question. I think it's one more thing that when we look at this master plan process, that all of these things have really been in core. I mean, so far it'll be interesting to see when you guys come out the other side, whether people like it or not. But it's so far it seems to be pretty comprehensive in terms of what it looks like. So.
Greatly appreciated.
But good question.
Thank you.
And can all of this, or the plan itself, is up on a website that the public can go to and review? Correct.
That's right. The whole presentation you see every time we've changed it, we've put that on the website, and it's. HTCRealEstate.com, and there's a link that has West End is a link up there, and the most recent in terms of when this first started, there were a lot of questions about stormwater and traffic that we tried to answer. Lately, it's when can I buy a townhouse?
Those are good questions to field.
And just to follow up on that, so the school district they have extra capacity. Is that what's being?
And she was right. From my understanding, and I'm not speaking for the school district, is they have extra capacity in some grades. There are some grades that are started increasing in numbers.
Right.
And you know, at least on first blush, it didn't seem like they thought there would need to be a building program as a result of this. But like you said, the process, this master plan process, as you move forward, will force some of those, whether in future developments, will force those questions. Is that kind of housing producing more kids or less kids and
right.
those kind of things?
Right. Okay. Great. Thanks.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for the presentation both today and at the prior meeting. And hearing questions from the public and from the Board of Supervisors, I'll move to close.
Closing is fine. If indeed we
thank you.
If indeed we're looking at an adoption date that needs an extension, we should know that tonight.
Is that something that you're open to? Okay.
My fear is that the December 18th meeting isn't going to give the board enough time to review the.
It's not, and also, and this is too major to do at the reorg meeting, I think.
So then we'll be looking for an extension to February 12th with the intention of having you on the January 22nd meeting.
Are you okay with that, Ken?
We can agree to that on the record, but again, you require that to be invited.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
You can memorialize that there. Okay.
Sorry for the interruption.
You've got to say something. So I'll move to close this public hearing. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Engel. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, and this hearing.
Executive session.
Every December,
Thomas carries his mustache off and does the narrow strip. He does the hat.
He does it.
Oh my God. And so for 2 months.